The third gene key. The transformational path of the third gene key moves from chaos to innocence, and it's the path of innovation. So this is a big gene key, and it has a big subject. It's the essence, in a way, of the whole I Ching, the nature of change itself. As you probably know, the I Ching is usually translated as the Book of Changes, and we humans, we find change difficult. Hence, this hexagram is translated as difficulty at the beginning. So no matter who you are or what you are, you're subject to constant change. It's been said by the Buddha, in fact, that the only constant is change, impermanence. So when you let that truth in a little, it's really very uncomfortable, at least in the beginning. So this gene key then is all about the process of letting change in. You have to let it into your heart, into your body, and into your soul. So this is a great contemplation on change. And you can see here that the dilemma is clinging, and you can see why. Because we naturally cling to the structures around us when change comes, because structure gives us the illusion of security. And this is what most people do. They try to cling to their relationships, their marriages, their possessions, their habits, their routines. And it sort of works for a bit. The only thing is, the big spoiler is death. I mean, death really screws it all up. It's just the biggest reminder of the truth. You know, for years we can be humming along in our own little world, absorbed with our lives, lost in our suffering, shuttling between pain and pleasure, and then sooner or later, death. You know, it reminds me of a story. I was with a very wise old man, a friend, and we'd taken a substance together, a mind-altering substance, and we were sitting there gazing at this wonderful view. And we'd been talking sporadically, and every now and again, a silence just kind of descended on us, and it was magical. And each time it happened, we just gave ourselves up to the silence. And in the middle of one of these sweeping, beautiful silences, suddenly, out of the blue, came these words: all roads lead to death. You know, and as my friend had spoken them in his very deep, wonderful voice. And after this sort of brief moment of recoil, I just started laughing. You know, it's like I laughed and I laughed, a belly laugh, and we both laughed together. And in a funny way, I'm still laughing many years later. And it feels to me like a healthy and an authentic response to the nature of change. All roads lead to death. You have to let it in deeply, you know, and that truth, it has to get past some resistance, some clinging. And there's a lot of clinging in us. You know, our lives are surrounded by anchor points. And some of our greatest anchor points are our relationships. My greatest anchor points are undoubtedly my children. But the question is, can we love those who are closest to us and not cling to them? That's a great challenge. That's a wonderful teaching. And we do that with the things that we love the most. We tend to cling to them. But the clinging is actually the thing that creates the interference. When we cling, it's because we haven't quite moved into unconditional love, not all the way. So we create or recreate chaos. And this is the shadow of chaos. And it's chaos because the love is very subtly tainted by fear. So when you contemplate this gene key, take a look at your anchor points, your job, your relationships, your home, your clothes, your body, all these things. All these things give us the illusion of stability. And when we're threatened with losing one of our anchor points, it really shows us the nature of our clinging. It shows us the hidden chaos. It doesn't, in a way, create the chaos. It shows us that it's already there underneath. We often think of chaos like a kind of hurricane or a tempest or something awful and powerful, but it's often very subtle. It's an undercurrent. It's an anxiety. It's a kind of nervousness, a deep and hidden fear on the inside. So just seeing your anchor points begins to change your relationship to the world around you, and you will begin to release them. You'll begin to pull up those anchors, and in the beginning, it won't feel safe. Not in the beginning. It's difficult. It's terrifying. You'll feel a deep discomfort in your stomach, in your belly. And it's the chaos. It's the vibration of your attachment, your clinging. I mean, imagine yourself without any anchor points. Who are you then? What are you? Do you even have a name? You've got to let that go as well. What are you? That's the question of this gene key. And it cuts deep inside. You can see how it's connected to the programming partner, the 50th gene key, corruption. You know, we're all corrupted. We aren't really who we are. We're clinging to these illusory anchors. And at the other end of the spectrum, it's harmony, the 50th city. So you have harmony and chaos. And chaos is the process of coming back into harmony. We have to enter deeply into the chaos inside. We have to dig into those cellular memories, the false belief systems, the mind maps, the emotional fixations, the desires, and this grand illusion that we call the ego, the I, the sense of I. So I recommend that you go deeply into this gene key, whoever you are, and you contemplate your anchor points and watch for them. Be vigilant and let your awareness dig out the roots. And you know something magical? Because there's a magic to this gene key, and it's love. Because clinging, it's just incomplete love. It's love that hasn't quite gone the whole way yet. So just love a little bit more. A little bit more deeply, because love vaporizes the anchor points. Love, unconditional love, it dissolves them. It releases the clinging. And it emerges as you see the clinging. It's a two-way street. As you feel the chaos, so you become aware of the love field emerging from behind it, from inside it. So if you have this gene key prominent in your profile, then this is your whole life's lesson, to love more, not to run away, that's the shadow pattern, but to stay. You know, the third shadow wants to change the outer in order not to feel unsafe. It tries to create another anchor before the old one gives way. What a thankless task. You know, you're projecting your inner chaos onto your outer life. That's awful. So look within. And contact those places where the tremor of chaos comes to the fore. And cultivate this as a habit. It feels unpleasant, but after a while, more love grows as you root out the weeds. And remember, you needn't run away. Changing the circumstances on the outside isn't going to help. It will just be a distraction. So be courageous. Uproot your fears. They're here right now inside you. And then you'll find a new life emerging, a new gift, a sense of spaciousness and laughter. There's so much laughter within this gene key. We just need a little courage to go within through contemplation, through self-inquiry, through meditation, through intuition. And take heart, because the difficulty is only in the beginning. But most people, they never begin. They never begin this work. And it's not surprising. Who willingly goes into chaos and discomfort? But you be the one who does. You be the valiant warrior. It's there anyway. It just needs to come up to the surface. And then everything becomes easier. It just becomes easier. The third gift, innovation. You know, this is life. The essence of the evolutionary life impulse. To survive, love must embrace change. It must adapt. It must innovate. Everything in the universe is spinning. All the spheres, all the stars, every photon, every cell, every atom has a whirlpool at its core as life breathes change into its lungs and exhales innovation. This is a beautiful subject to contemplate. Think about nature. You know this truth we've all heard, that nature abhors a vacuum. This is where innovation comes from. You know, out in my garden, if I cut down a small bush, then immediately something else starts growing there. Something adapts itself and springs up into that space. It's a kind of miracle. I sometimes do this experiment in my house. We have this beautiful big kitchen where almost everything goes on in our house. And in the middle of the kitchen is this wonderful big table, like a lot of kitchens have. And my aesthetic sense really enjoys coming into that room and seeing a clear table. You know, just the beauty of the wood and the cleanness of the space. I like that feeling. You know what I mean? But I have three children. And the moment they see an empty table, some kind of gene inside them just goes, quick, open all the cupboards, get something out, get it on the table. This doesn't feel right. It's, you know, this is my experiment. And you'd be amazed at the amount of stuff that comes pouring out of the cupboards onto that empty table. And then, of course, they forget to put it all away. And that's another story. You know, this may not be how you normally think of as an innovation, but it is how it works. Life constantly needs to expand, to experiment, and then maybe make a breakthrough or not. You know, a lot of innovations don't work. Think of all the innovations that fail. You know, my boy, he has this book of innovations that failed. It's hilarious. Flying machines with flapping wings and things like that, you know. The very nature of innovation is to take the risk to keep on failing until it succeeds. Hence the passing through chaos phase. So the first thing about this third gene key, this third gift, is that you have to be okay with chaos. You can't be freaked out by chaos. If you don't embrace chaos, then you will have a very, very difficult life. It's why this gene key has a lot to do with the inner child, with children. Because the child embraces chaos so effortlessly. And we adults, we all have a child inside us somewhere. So the third gift is about reawakening the spirit of youthful play on the inside. And you know, it really helps to spend some time around children if you have this gift, or if you're contemplating it. The way a young child plays, it's so exquisite, especially when they're on their own. You know, my young daughter, she was just upstairs this morning with all her beads and her counters and buttons, and she was sorting them into boxes and bags, and her panda was buying them. And they'd become sweets and lollies and things like that. And she was just lost in this world. And it's captivating. And she's just unconsciously innovating. And innovation, what it often does is it takes something it's seen like that in the world. And then it repeats it, but in a new way. And as it's repeating it, it stumbles spontaneously on a new idea. And this is exactly how DNA replication works. Because mutations in the body are innovations. Some might say they're mistakes, but that's just adding a judgment. They're simply changes. So what makes a successful innovation as opposed to an unsuccessful one? Well, think about the body, you know, your body. Innovation is going on in there all the time. You know, the miracle of our body has come about because of innovation. Cells dividing, subdividing, splitting, replicating, trying out new patterns and on and on and on. We're this evolutionary machine. And sometimes the innovations don't work. That's what cancer is. It's the cutting edge of the innovation. And of course, it can eventually kill the organism. But you know, if you give life enough time, it will eventually work out how to create an immortal body. And individual bodies are its experimental ground. If some die along the way, that's part of the price evolution has to pay to perfect itself. And we have to realize then that this is what evolution is doing. And you may think it's random, but most people who've studied anything in depth will tell you that that looks impossible. It's as though life has a goal in mind, and it will relentlessly pursue that goal. It's the same with the acorn. Think of an acorn. It has a goal. It has a pattern that it will work towards, and it innovates and it innovates. And if the conditions are right, it will eventually become an oak tree. And that's you. And that's life. Life is that acorn. It has a hidden plan. And that plan is to perfect itself, to attain physical immortality. I mean, that's the body's ultimate kind of plan, really. That's something to think about. And you know what? The only way to get there is by coordination, by working in harmony. And that's the problem with these cancer cells, is that they go against the whole, at least on one level. On another level, in the bigger picture, you could say that they actually provide the key because life needs to know how not to do things so that it can then succeed and have an even bigger breakthrough. And we humans, you know, we are caught up in the midst of all this game. We are part of life's plan. So life has to engineer its own spontaneous breakthroughs, and we're one of them. And we will go so much further. And even if this current race of humans doesn't manage it, then another race of creatures will spring up in our place in a few billion years. You know, life can't be stopped. It will stop short of nothing but God. You know, the secret of innovation is coherence. You have to create a pocket of coherence amidst the chaos. And when you do that, then you bring order to the chaos. And the more coherence you create, the more organized the cosmos becomes. And the order, it actually exists already within the chaos, just as the city exists inside the shadow or the oak within the acorn. It's all just embedded and enfolded. And innovation is the unfolding mechanism. It looks random, but it isn't. It's all following a pattern and a timing. So how to apply all this to your life? How do we create this coherence around us? Well, one of the best ways I know is to get in touch with the ideal inside you. Because the ideal is where we're heading. So contemplate the cities. Contemplate them over and over. Just as the acorn contemplates the oak tree through its every tiny innovation. And let your whole life be a passage of perfection towards that city without ever needing to leave the present moment. You know, this is a trick. You're allowed to be an unfolding. You can still be in the now and be in a state of unfolding. So bring your awareness over and over to the oak tree. And it won't be the same oak tree that you'll become, because yours is just a kind of echo, a future memory caught in your imagination and your intuition, still to come. But the impulse behind it is true. And let your joyous unfolding be creative. And whenever you contemplate the cities, you'll feel a great upsurge of creativity. You'll naturally begin innovating as your energy transforms the raw material of the shadow state into a higher coherence. And innovation feels so good. It's so delightful. It's a good addiction. And this gene key has a bit of an addictive character to it. You know, because the 24th gene key, which is addiction, it's part of the same codon ring, and that lends itself through all of them. But this is a good addiction, especially when it's put into the service of a high ideal. Innovation without that can easily become a cancer. As we often see that in the world around us. You know, we see how so many of our scientific innovations, brilliant though they are actually destroying the world we love. It's simply because they're not rooted in a high ideal. So use the tremendous creative energy of this gene key. Pour it into your ideal, because that's the only way it will keep you healthy and it won't drive you mad. The third city, innocence. I was listening to a physicist the other day, and he was postulating how a universe like ours might have come to be created. He said that this universe most likely came out of another universe. That in itself made me chuckle. But then he said that all it would take is for a single proton to escape the event horizon of one universe and enter into the deep void. And that single proton, when faced with the immensity of that nothingness, would just delight in its own expansion so much that it would give birth to another universe. I love that. It's like my kitchen table. You know, life is unstoppable. I live in the beautiful, rich, rolling countryside of South Devon in England. A greener place, it's hard to imagine. And Devon is famous for its farm products. You know, it's in particular, its dairy products, rich cream, butter, milk. And you see these fields full of cows. It's a bucolic sight, kind of Eden sight. The cows and their tails swishing, and they drift lazily from field to field. It's very peaceful. And every now and again, you know, the farmer comes in and he opens up a new field when they've, you know, when they've eaten all the grass in the old one. And I don't know if you've ever seen this, but it's an incredible sight. These cows, they just go crazy with excitement. You know, a lush, untouched new pasture, green and inviting. It's kind of their idea of heaven. And these huge, usually placid creatures turn into these great, big, massive puppies. And they rush and they prance and they climb on each other and they jump and they kick in the air. You know, they're a lesson in ecstasy. And that's the third gene key. That's the third city. The unutterable joy of play. Of filling the void with your dance, with your voice, with your presence. And while we're on England's green pastures, I want to tell you about William Blake, a wonderful English painter and poet. And he was an early English ecstatic. You may have heard of him or seen his art. He was a deep, deep mystical man. And he wrote these poem cycles called The Songs of Innocence and The Songs of Experience. And they're wonderful. Short kind of pastiches of rural and urban life with this motif running underneath. And it's all about innocence and the loss of innocence. And then the final regaining of innocence through the search for the divine. And that final innocence being even more exquisite than the firstborn innocence, if you know what I mean. Anyway, if you get a chance to read those poems, they're wonderful. The point is that there are two innocences. There's an ignorant innocence, like a newborn baby, and that's what we usually think of as innocence, the creature that just expresses its beauty without awareness of itself. And then there's this wise innocence, like the old man or the old lady whose heart and mind have opened up again after a long search and much pain and travail. And this wise innocence and this ignorant innocence are the same innocence. They're the same field. The city is in the shadow. The only difference is awareness. Wise innocence has come full circle. It's why grandparents and grandchildren have such a strong bond. It's why little babies look like old people sometimes, and why old people often become very childlike again. And what about the rest of us in the middle, I hear you say? Well, we're the journey. We are Blake's poems. We are that passage. And you don't have to wait until you're old to be wise. Wisdom isn't dependent on age. Wisdom is dependent on love, deep love. How deeply can you love? How far can you expand your love into the green meadows of life? Life is this unravelling. It's already complete, even though it's still in the process of unravelling. So can you be both? Can you be both its beginning and its end? Can you be awake in the dream that is the middle? The ancients called life a leela, a play. And it's a good translation of the word, because the word play means both a theatre, a drama, but it also suggests playfulness, and both are needed. I mean, you can't really make a joke about everything in the middle. There's so much suffering, there's so much tragedy, there's so much injustice. It's hard to be playful in the face of most of the stuff that goes on this planet. So the playfulness, the innocence, it has to be of the inner awareness rather than the outer always. That's where the dance is. So you can be grieving on the outside, but on the inside there's still this awareness of the play unfolding. It gives you a little distance. And this is, you know, this gene key, it's part of the ring, the codon ring of living and dying. That's six gene keys that are the gene keys of the drama of life. The 24th gene key, that's our addiction to the drama and the eternal recreation of the drama, samsara. And then the 23rd gene key, that's the evolutionary impulse towards complexity. And then finally trying to come back to simplicity and finding its essence once again. You know, the old person coming back to the childhood. And then the 27th gene key is the human story of that unfolding as we move from selfishness to selflessness. And the 42nd gene key, that's the ending, just as the third gene key is the beginning. And you have to let go of expectation along the way. You know the ending, but you also don't know how it's going to get there. That's the mystery part. That's the beauty. That's the play. The play is the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king. I love this line from Hamlet, when he puts on a play within the play to trick his father into giving away his guilt. And it's a beautiful, you know, mechanism, because, of course, we are watching this play within the play, and we have this rising sense that this is going to turn into a tragedy. And who's watching us? That's the 20th gene key. That's the sixth of those. That's the final one of that group of that codon ring, the ring of living and dying. And the 20th gene key is divine presence. You know, when it awakens, when it awakens, when it's time, when the curtain comes down and the audience becomes aware of itself once again. You know that feeling when the lights go back on, you've been in the cinema and you kind of rub your eyes and go, oh yes, I remember where I am. Oh yes, it's yes, here I am. You know, this is the ring of living and dying. One day the lights will come on. One day the innocence of everything will reawaken to itself. It happens in the individual, and the individual realizes it's been in an illusion. And then one day it will happen to the whole. And in the meantime, we're in the Maya. We're in the Leela, the divine play, the unfolding. And as your awareness begins to grow inside, you surrender your attachment to the outcome. You know the grand outcome anyway. You know the curtain will go up. So why worry about the twists and turns and the subplots? It's all the twists and turns of the serpentine third city as it spontaneously explores the cosmic meadow. This is why it's about death. Because that's what we're here to transcend. And our awareness, that is our consciousness, it's deathless. It's outside the movie. So when it remembers that, it giggles. It inwardly giggles. And then it falls into silence. That's the 24th city. What the hell am I going to say? I mean, I'm not going to stand up in the middle of the play and shout out to everyone, hey, everyone, it's just a play. Maybe I'd better be quiet. Maybe I'd better just play along. Let the Tao unfold. Let nature go on exploring itself. And so you come to deep innocence and deep surrender. And the game is over, but the play still goes on. What a mystery. What a wonder. To be love. That's the thing. To be love. It makes me laugh because every city ends in the same way. It ends without ending. The mind says, no, there has to be an ending. Everything needs to have an ending at some point. But the heart says, no, how can there be an ending? There's no such thing as an ending. You see, the eternal is not an area we're very familiar with, because the eternal must lie beyond the lower mind. It's the domain of the higher mind, the heart mind. Ultimately, it's the domain of pure essential being. So this is the harmony of the spheres. That's the programming partner here, the 50th, the harmony. That even chaos, even tragedy is part of the harmony. It's part of the innocence. Everything is part of the innocence. Everything is part of everything. Okay, enough now. When I hear a sentence come out of my mouth like that, I realize that my words are becoming meaningless. So let's just enjoy the silence.